Gaza. So while the focus has pretty much been on the United States and the Zionist entity illegally attacking Iran on February 28th, and then the Memorandum of Understanding, and now the tit-for-tat, etc., the attacks in Lebanon also by the occupation forces, also illegal. The genocide in Gaza has continued unabated, and conditions for Palestinians have become even more dire and deplorable, despite a so-called ceasefire, which we've got to put in air quotes, because that has not changed conditions for Palestinians. If anything, it's made conditions worse. And let's not forget about the continued illegal land grabs by illegal Israeli settlers in the occupied West Bank, and this digital registry that has now been created by the Israeli government to ensure that any illegal settler that removes a Palestinian from his home and from their property, they would simultaneously be able to register the names of that said property in their possession, literally. So with all of this continuing unabated, what exactly is the status quo of Gaza, the besieged enclave? And we continue to focus on what is happening illegally to Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. Let's try and focus on the so-called Board of Peace for now, because things are continuing, works undercover, under the cover of darkness, so to speak. We use that as a metaphor. But from the perspective of the Board of Peace and President Trump and the intentions for the besieged enclave, where do things stand for Palestinians? Online, Media Review Network executive member, Professor Ahmed Jazbeh. Professor, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, Jay. Shukran for having me.
Always good to have you on. Just at a glance, Professor, looking at this, Trump's Board of Peace, the plans are to grant themselves sweeping immunity. That's according to several documents that have been examined by a number of media houses.
Yeah, you know, I said this before and I'll say it again, that this Board of Peace is a continuation of the occupation by other means, and the continuation of the colonialism of Palestine by other means. The drafts, you know, in my opinion, you know, when you read it, and I went through it quite quickly, and, you know, it attempts to justify the immunity, and it draws on the UN Charter, and the UN Charter that calls for protection for diplomats, you know, from any arrest, detention, or legal proceedings. And they turn this into, in the context of Gaza, the Gaza courts, or any other entity in Gaza. So they basically trying to get immunity for any of these so-called, you know, soldiers from the International Stabilization Force, from anybody from the Board of Peace that may visit Gaza to, and, you know, engage in any war crimes and crimes against humanity, against the people of Gaza. So, you know, this is a continuation of the war, a continuation of the occupation, and the continuation of colonialism by other means, because there is little oversight, internal or external. It's basically the Board of Peace is a law unto itself. It violates, you know, international humanitarian law. In fact, it's fundamentally irreconcilable with international humanitarian law, because international humanitarian law mandates accountability for war crimes, crimes against humanity, and even human rights abuses. This is basically a legal system unto itself, and although in draft form, it needs to be fought with vigor, because this legal expert, and the very few legal experts that I happen to, you know, read about and their opinions on this, I say that this is, you know, an attempt to avoid accountability. You know, the people of Gaza are not considered human, so so this is just trying to appease the Israelis, trying to appease Trump, because there's nothing Trump hates more than accountability. You know, the Iranians held him to account recently, and he hates that. So this is merely a lot of obfuscation, if I can put it very simply.
So, Professor, essentially, Palestinians in the besieged enclave and in the occupied West Bank, they are facing some major, major trepidations here. One, the Board of Peace, law unto themselves. Secondly, talks in Egypt a couple of days ago focusing on disarming the resistance in totality. And then in the occupied West Bank, the continued theft and land grabs by the illegal settlers, who are predominantly from Brooklyn and New York, amongst others. And then this silent works that was put in motion by Jared Kushner and others, but spearheaded by him predominantly, to look at transforming Al-Aqsa into a multi-faith complex, and literally to change the administrative dynamic of it. A couple of Palestinian, a couple of Arab officials have also spoken about it, but not many are perhaps focusing on it. So these are all the attacks that are literally heading in the direction of Palestinians, while the world's focus may be on the United States and the Zionist entity attacking Iran and what the Zionist entity has been doing in Lebanon for a number of months. But the Palestinians are facing some major disastrous consequences here.
Yeah, whilst we are fixated on, you know, this agreement with between Iran and the United States, you know, we have the border peace, the issues in Gaza, as the attempts to continue the colonialism by other means, but, you know, not enough attention, although there is scant attention to it, is playing place on American attempts to alter the status quo when it comes to Al-Aqsa, because the Israelis are refusing permission for the Wakaf, the Jordanian Wakaf, which manages Al-Aqsa, to carry out even essential maintenance on Al-Aqsa. So they're obviously trying to create the conditions for a change in the status quo by removing the Jordanians as the custodians of Al-Aqsa. You know, Jared Kushner, if he's not trying to build an oasis in Gaza, or recently a multi-million-dollar resort in Albania, seems to love these mega projects, and you know, it's all about ultimately building a huge empire for himself, using his proximity to Donald Trump as his father-in-law. And those living in Al Quds, in occupied Al Quds, especially the old city, have long sounded alarm. Over restrictions, there's much maintenance that needs to be done, and that's not even being done. The majority of the Wakaf workers are not allowed to be allowed to conduct their work. So whilst we are fixated on many issues, we might not forget that ultimately this is about Al-Aqsa. Ultimately, this is about destroying Al-Aqsa and building, the so-called temple to hasten the coming of Hazrat Isa. So these are all part of the plans. And, you know, we need to give a big picture. You know, we always talk about the Greater Israel Project. That is one element, and that is a bit of a longer term, which has been dealt a severe blow by the Islamic Republic of Iran. They have assisted the Ummah, beyond what we can measure in putting the brakes on this, in even the medium to long term, the Greater Israel Project. That has put, that brakes have been put on that. But internally, now we see the border peace in Gaza, as well as the issues with Al-Aqsa, and we need to renew our commitment to that, our vigor in ensuring, in opposing that. We have the useful idiots in the Arab world, the UAE, Saudi Arabia, et al., that will be happy to change the status quo. I know the Saudis want to control Al-Aqsa, make the king the custodian of the three holiest sites of Islam, that their element to it. But we must ensure that we continuously oppose this, because they're trying to make hay while the sun shines. No, Trump has 2 years left, plus minus 2 years left as president of the U.S. And it is within this context that, you know, the Israelis pushed and ultimately failed, you know, to topple Iran. And now Kushner is trying to, you know, build his skyscrapers in Gaza, trying to alter the status quo when it comes to the old city and Masjid al-Aqsa. And it's important that, you know, there's enough sustainable pressure upon this, because pressure does work to some extent. You know, if there was no internal pressure, albeit weak within the House of Saud, Bin Salman would have normalized with Israel a long time ago. That same can be said for Qatar. So pressure does work to some extent. And it's important that the Ummah continues to put pressure, especially when it comes to Al-Aqsa, because Al-Aqsa is a red line that is obviously non-negotiable.
So, Professor, many have questioned why Iran did not include Palestine and Gaza in the MOU. Some Iranian officials have then questioned the Board of Peace and what several Muslim countries and its leadership agreed to, and that consequently threw a spanner in the works. So those questioning the fact that Palestine was not included, would that then be a forthright conclusion and a subsequent answer to this perhaps very lopsided argument that has been brought forth by some quarters?
Yeah, you know, MJ, I'm glad you asked that question, because I asked this question to the second highest diplomat of the Islamic Republic of Iran last week, at an engagement in Pretoria. Mm. I asked this question and he was very happy to answer this. And, you know, very simply, he stated that, you know, Iran has, for example, a mandate from Hezbollah in Lebanon to negotiate on behalf of it. Okay, when it comes to Lebanon, when it comes to South Lebanon, and so on. But when it comes to Gaza, Iran has sacrificed a lot. They sacrificed their supreme leader. They sacrificed many of their scientists, many of their citizens. They have financed Hamas when it comes to money, when it comes to weapons, and so on. So they've sacrificed a lot. We need to look at the long durée of history, not just this issue. But very simply, you know, they didn't have a mandate. They don't have a mandate from the Palestinians to include Gaza, to include Palestine as part of the negotiations. And, you know, because the Palestinians themselves, unfortunately, are extremely disunited and disjointed. You know, you got Fatah, you got Hamas, you got Hamas within Gaza, you got Hamas in the diaspora. Mm. And, you know, those nuances are very different. You know, they think very differently. I've noticed this firsthand. You got Fatah, who's obviously aligned to the U.S., the collaborates with Israel. Then you got the Popular Resistance Committees, the PL, FP, and so on. So the Palestinians themselves are extremely disunited, and the Iranians didn't have a mandate to include Gaza, to include Palestinians as a whole in these negotiations. Whilst we can criticize that to some extent, reasonable extent, we must understand, you know, the workings on the ground when it comes to this issue. Gaza is big for the Ummah, but, you know, there's only so much that the Islamic Republic of Iran can do. Mm. And in negotiations, you know, realpolitik, you know, what could reasonably be achieved in these negotiations, given prevailing global power dynamics right now, is this 14-point memorandum of understanding and what they try to negotiate into a permanent agreement. But that does not mean that Gaza is permanently off the table, that Palestine in general is off the table. But what it does mean is that there's a lot more work to be done, that, you know, Iran cannot do this alone. You know, it needs the assistance of the Ummah. You know, if you had, you know, 57, Muslim countries pushing together, then you would have greater leverage. when it comes to negotiation. But unfortunately, I know it's a bit of a bitter pill to swallow for everyone, but, you know, realpolitik and the nature of negotiations mean that, you know, you only can negotiate to a certain extent. And when you don't have a mandate from people, you know, Iran cannot speak on behalf of the Palestinians unless the Palestinians give a mandate to do so. And that mandate they didn't have.
Professor Ahmed Jansbah from the Media Review Network, as always, Professor, Jazakallah, thanks so much for your time.